So typically, like I said, we would jump into a new series this morning. I'll do that next week. But as we come into the new year, I thought I'd let you in a little bit into my own head and my own processing as I kind of process through the new year for myself, for my family. Does anybody make any New Year's resolutions? Is that part of anybody's life? Anybody want to share what those New Year's resolutions are? To lose weight, okay? You know, 80% of people quit after the first 2 weeks on that New Year's resolution, so. Whew, tough to live up.
I got Todd to help me on this.
Oh, boy. You definitely won't quit. Anybody else? Anybody make New Year's resolutions? Is anybody like, I hate New Year's resolutions, I don't do that? Okay, some of you. Okay. You made one or you hate it?
I never make one.
You never make one.
I don't need to change.
What were you going to say, Todd? Decluttering. Barb just went. Why'd you say that out loud? Yeah, for the first 2 weeks, and then we quit. We become part of the 80% that quits their New Year's resolutions. Why do you think it's difficult to stay? Not just with like a New Year's resolution, but like if you ever wanted to make a change in your life, why do you think it's difficult to keep moving in that change? What do you think? Okay, comfort.
It takes 75 days to make it happen.
Okay, takes time. Yep. It's very difficult to make any sort of change in your life. I think it's really good to have goals for change in your life, to take stock of your life. Both externally with like the things you have, your job, the possessions you have, money, home, car, and anything else you want to throw in there, and things that maybe you want to adjust in those areas. And then there's also internal things that it's good to take stock in, your spiritual life, your mental, your emotional health, your physical health, relationships, and processing through if those things are healthy. But often I don't think we take any inventory, consistent inventory of either of those things. We typically kind of just go through life because life is busy, life is full, and it's really difficult to make changes. Anybody ever you like want to make a change in your life, and maybe you like make a plan to do that, and then maybe you do it for a little bit, and then it stops, then you go back to it, and then it stops, and then it's like, yeah, forget it. That's often a lot of our lives. And I think the reason for that, at least in my own life, is because I start with the desire for whatever it is I want to change. But the reality is that desire is not enough for lasting transformational change. Let me say that again. Desire alone is not enough for lasting transformational change. Desire by itself often will become transactional. In other words, take the classic New Year's change of working out, right? You want to lose weight, get more flexible, eat better, whatever it is. That's the desire, right? You've assessed something like, I need to do this. Well, when you don't see quick change, like if you want to lose weight, that takes, does it happen like that? No, it takes a lot of time, right? And so when you don't see quick change, we often give up on it because desire, it's not deep enough to keep at it when the results are not there because we're a transactional people. So how do you make transformational change in anything in life? Change that's deep, change that is consistent and lasting. We live in a culture that's just full of instant gratification. And so most of our life is spent in this space of transaction. Whether it be change for our life or in your marriage or parenting or in your job or money or friendships, whatever it is, we don't do many things for the pure delight of it. We are a gratification, transactional people. So how do you move away from transactional living to transformational living, which is much longer lasting? So I believe that once you assess areas of change, the scriptures give us this simple formula, if you will, to try out. And I'm not saying this works every time, but I think the Lord does give us kind of some foundation, some groundwork into something that if you tease it out in your life a little bit, it may help you. It may work. In my own life, I struggle to make shift in my life, to stick with changes, to stay with things. And so for the last kind of maybe 2 months, I've just been wrestling on my own with the Lord to discover, like, what's the difference between living a transactional life and a transformational life? And how do you change to make the changes more holistic and longer lasting? So if you will, I'm going to kind of let you into like my process a little bit here that I've been kind of teasing out over the last several months. So start with me in Psalm 139. And in verse 23 and 24, it says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. And see if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." The Message version kind of fleshes that out a little bit. It says this, "Investigate my life, O God. Find out everything about me. Cross-examine and test me. Get a clear picture of what I'm about. See for yourself whether I've done anything wrong. Then guide me on the road to life." So how do I take stock in my life? How do I assess my life? Well, I've found the best way to do that is to look at seven areas of your life. Now, I don't have time to go through all these areas, but what I would do is if you have something to write or in your phone, I would put these as like headings. And then you can add like subpoints to these things. So your spiritual health would be number one, your mental health, number two, and these aren't in like any particular order, okay? Your emotional health, your physical health, your relational health, your money and possessions, and your time. I'm gonna go through those again. Anybody need those again? Your spiritual life, your spiritual health, your mental health, your emotional health, your physical health, relational health, your money and possessions, and your time. For instance, those are your headings. So with relationships, you might start with Jesus. You might go, okay, let me assess that. And then you might move to, if you're married, or to a friendship, or to your kids. Those would be like kind of the subpoints. Okay, let me look at these things. Does that make sense? Everybody kind of follow that? And you kind of do those with the different areas. So Psalm 139 teaches us to assess our life, to go to the Lord and say, assess me, like investigate me, see what I'm about. And part of the assessing life is to ask questions about those areas in life and if they align with the Lord. For instance, in the relationship category, you might ask, if you're married, am I loving my spouse like Christ loves the church? Well, okay, you might go, I don't know. So now you have to ask questions and go, well, what does that even mean? How do I even do that? Or with possessions and money, am I being generous with what God gave me to steward, or am I hoarding it? Or with your possessions, am I stewarding the things God gave me, or am I not? And so forth and so forth. Now, here's what I think. A lot of people do these things. They take stock of life, and they take stock of all those areas maybe, and then you get so overwhelmed with the changes that you're like, oh my gosh, right? Like, I'm a horrible person. I'm miserable. I don't spend my money right. I don't treat my spouse right. I'm bad with my kids, right? And all my mental health is crazy. I'm stressed out. And now it's like all this stuff, right? And so then what ends up happening? You don't make any change. You actually get overwhelmed by it. You get overwhelmed by the assessment. So you don't actually ever move past the assessment. Can any of you change everything at once in your life? No. But we think that we can. So when we can't, we stop trying. So most likely, changing one thing, even if it's really simple, will be very difficult for us. Just one thing. Just one thing. And honestly, most of us know actually like what the one thing is that you probably need to address immediately. Like, you already know. It's like that thing that just keeps coming at you. So focus there. And most likely, as you focus there, it'll bleed into other areas. And what ends up happening is you start in one area, and transformation begins to happen actually across the board. Now, why do we need to do this to begin? Well, because I think we've created what we like to call bad habits. Does anybody have any bad habits? Okay, just me and Pat. Cool. You have all of them. Right, okay. So Pat and I have bad habits, so we'll just talk about this for a minute. But what if we, rather than say, oh, I have bad habits, what if we put a little bit more depth, a little bit more conviction to that, and say that we've created bad disciplines? Boy, that kind of shifts things, doesn't it? Like, really shifts things. Anything that you do over and over again, day in, day out, is a discipline in your life. It's not a habit, it's a discipline. You have created a discipline in your life. It might be a really bad discipline, it also might be a really great discipline, right? You probably have both. Bad disciplines, just like good disciplines, create certain outcomes. So let's say at night, if you're like me, I grab a snack, watch TV, stay up too late, get up the next morning tired. Anybody else do that? So that discipline creates things in me, maybe in you, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, long-term, that are not good. Now, the opposite of this would be, I go to bed at a good time, I get good rest, and that will create a different result, right? So you have bad disciplines, you have good disciplines. Does that make sense? Everybody tracking with me? Bad disciplines create the bad results. Good disciplines create good results. Any questions on that? No. Okay, I'm going to keep going then. If you have questions, just raise your hand. I'll answer it. Okay. So once you've taken stock, you've kind of laid your life in front of the Lord, allowed Him to search you and know you. Areas of deficit, I would say, have been identified. You have to create a discipline to move towards transformation. And here's why discipline has to come first. Discipline creates transformation, then creates delight, then creates desire. Delight or desire alone will not create transformation, but it will create a transactional life if you want to live that way. The discipline gets things deep that leads to delight. I know I've given this illustration many times, but years ago, my life was not in a good place. So I started running. If you knew me before, like I only ran when I played sports. I hated running. And I got a friend of mine who's a running coach, and he got after me, made a plan for me, and I ran my first half marathon. And during that training, I realized that it was, I actually delighted in running. It became a delight. It was enjoyable. And I desired to run. It helped me physically, helped me mentally, helped me spiritually, and so many other things. In August, my foot started to hurt, and I have plantar fasciitis in my left foot. So I haven't run since August. And not being able to run has affected my delight in life, my desire in other areas of my life, other than physically. And so now I'm trying to make a plan to figure out how to do something else other than running. But without the discipline and getting my body to a place where I could go out and run 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 miles at a clip, the delight never happened. Like if I was just to not run at all and then go out and try to run like a half a marathon, there would be no delight in that. None. Absolutely none. But the discipline of consistently running created running to be a delight. Some of my kids were like, hey, I got to train for soccer. Will you run with me? And then I had to try to keep up with them, right? And that was fun. And then I would run with friends and family. And and I got to be healthy and to coach my kids, and I got to run and actually pay to run in races. And people are always like, why are you like paying to run in races? Well, because it helped support like underprivileged kids in our town and suicide awareness. And so all of a sudden you can see that the discipline of running created a delight and a desire and opportunity that affected relationships with my family, with my friends, with my resources, with my gifts, with my talents, with my money, etc. Do you see how one discipline then affected all of these areas? It helped my physical body, my emotional health, my mental health, and my spiritual health. So that's what I mean. One discipline will bleed into other areas of your life without you even realizing it. So when you take the assessment of your life and you go, oh my gosh, just start with one thing. And you will begin to see that it will bleed into the other areas of your life. So assess life, let the Lord search you, then grab one thing and create a discipline. Hebrews 12:11 says this, for the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant. Anybody ever have that experience? Where you're trying to create discipline and it is painful, right? Not pleasant. But he goes on to say, he says, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. In other words, the discipline will create peace in your life. Now, turn over to Psalm 37 with me. I think this passage moves from Psalm 139 of the assessment of your life and the discipline that to transform your life. And it talks about how when you do those things, you'll begin to delight and desire the things of the Lord. You probably know this passage. It says this, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. So the discipline is going to create the delight and the desire as your life begins to transform. I said this earlier, but as a culture, and I believe often as a church, we're so transactional, we're not transformational. So what often, not always, motivates us is the transaction of the things rather than the transformation. What discipline does is it detoxes us from the transactional life that we have been living and moves us to a transformational life. So think about all the things that you do. Are they transactional or are they transformational? Here's how you decipher that. If it's transactional, you'll eventually stop or limit what you do for someone or something when there's no return on your investment. Transformational will make decisions rooted in the ways of Jesus, and when deeply rooted in this, will do things that not only transform your own life, but will transform those around you and the world around you. And when things get difficult, you'll be able to make decisions to continue to do whatever it is to walk in the ways of Jesus, not based on a transaction, but on the wisdom of Christ. Let me flesh that out for you. So some of you are married. So we do things for your spouse. Anybody ever do anything for their spouse? Do you ever do anything for your spouse hoping for something in return? Just nod your head yes, because if you don't, you're a liar. Some of you that aren't married, do you ever do something for a friend or for your parent hoping for something in return? You all nod your head yes, because you do. We're transactional, right? And so we do things for our kids expecting a return on that. Kids, you do something for your parents hoping for a return on that. You do this at work, you do it with your friends, you do it with your money, you do it with your time, you do it with your energy. We give something to receive something in return. But with Jesus, you give something and the return is someone. Not something, it's someone. And that someone is Jesus. Now, I know that sounds like super churchy and you're like, oh, whatever. Let me explain. In him, in Jesus, you receive all that you need to find health and healing, which is one of our values, in areas of life that can really transform the way that you live. And just, here's an FYI, that doesn't have to be something that's like super hyper spiritual. It can be very practical. Just a minute ago, you said, I love when people come over to my house and they need something. because that's how I love to serve, right? It's very practical. It's not like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Right? It's just, oh, you need to eat? Here's some food. It's very practical, right? Because we're so transactional in life, and it's why most change doesn't happen or doesn't last, because we don't often think we receive back what we have given, so we end up stopping the giving of those things. Or in the church, we over-spiritualize things when they're just practical things that need to happen. So somebody give me an example of something that they want to change, or maybe your friend wants to change in their life. somebody just give me anything. Okay, cool, great. Anything, literally anything.
Consistency.
Okay, consistency. So now remember the process, right? Assess. So I've assessed my life. Dylan's assessed his friend's life, right? Or him. And he's realized, okay, I need more consistency in my life. Okay? So now I have to create a discipline to be consistent. So now the question becomes, what areas of consistency do I want to be consistent in? So you got to figure that out, right? Now, if you became disciplined in, let's just say, your time management, right? I became consistent in my time management, so the things I want to do, I'm getting done. The people I want to hang out with, I can hang out with. The money I need to make, I'm making. So everything's kind of working out, right? It's one thing, time, but it's affected everything else, right? Would you then begin to delight in the money you're making, the friends that you have, things that you're doing? Yeah?
Sure.
Sure, right? And it would create a desire to do those things either more or more deeply, correct? So assess, right? I've assessed, I've figured out what it is, I've created a discipline, I've now created the desire and the delight for those things, and I can continue to live my life. So if you became disciplined in one thing, it can lead to the other things. So let's examine delight for a second in Psalm 37 here. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you desires of your heart. First glance, it kind of seems transactional, doesn't it? Right? Delight, I get this. Right? And that's because that's how we often read the Bible, as a transaction, not as transformation. So if I delight in God, he'll give me what I want. The issue is that you can't delight in someone in order to get something. It's really not delight at that point. It's transactional. One of the reasons I think we don't experience delight is because we actually deprive one another of delight and we don't pursue delight. It says delight in the Lord. Well, what does that even mean? I was in a meeting on Friday with a guy who installs solar panels for business and homes. And he said this in our meeting. He said, I love installing solar. And I was like, sounds horrible, right? And I said, well, why? He said, I love the job of it, number one. I love the work. I love to work. I like to work with my hands. And then he says, I love saving people money, seeing them happy, and providing a service that helps them improve their life. And he said, for instance, I pay $4 a month for my electric bill. I was like, well, that would be nice. I said, maybe I should love solar more. Now, 30 minutes before this conversation, where we were sitting having coffee, I was on a roof in 15 degrees, four stories up, walking around so he could see where the solar needed to be installed. I could not wait to get off that roof. Like, I had zero delight being up there, let alone going back up there for when they install things. And now I'm sitting across from this guy as he explains the delight that he has for solar installation. Now, this guy does this like 7 days a week. And he loves it. His life is filled with desire and delight to help people, to provide for his family, to use his gifts and talents, and lots of other reasons. Now, one of the reasons I think this verse is a struggle for us is not because we don't delight in the Lord, but we actually deprive ourselves on the daily from delighting in the Lord, so that when we have the opportunity to delight in the Lord, it's not enough. And life is so busy and full that the delight is so momentary And I think it's often because our delight in the Lord is transactional. It's not transformational. You ever attend a church gathering and maybe like somebody raises their hands or like they get down on their knees or they shout amen, and for whatever reason, the instant thought in your head is judgment, not prayer and worship. Anybody ever have that experience? I have. That's because your delight in the Lord is in a deficit. It's in a deficit. You ever wonder why you can't like step into this space and like enter right into worship? Or like lay your burdens down and allow the Lord to assess your life? Or to delight in the Lord, or even have a desire to be here to worship the Lord. It's because our lives are in such deficit. We live in deficit. And so we walk into a space like this with your stress, with your worry, with your sins and your struggles, and that's great. I'm not saying it's not. But your attendance is a discipline that's become transactional, not transformational. So you come looking for a quick fix, ease your guilt, more information for your head, but transformation finds delight in the Lord and desires to be here for that reason. Listen, there are days I don't want to be here. I'll just be honest with you. There's days I don't want to come here and preach. I'm tired or whatever, for whatever reason, right? But I know that I need to be here. I know that the discipline over the long haul will transform me. Inconsistency will not create transformation in your life, in any area of your life. Too often, the things I think of the church are the first things that we miss. So let me just give you an example. And please don't hear me saying, like, I'm not saying this to guilt trip. This is just a good example because it's really practical, okay? So as a church, we don't actually ask a whole lot of you guys to live. We actually don't ask a lot of you because we want you to live your everyday life on mission with people where you're at, wherever you are, right? So we ask for your time, talents, and treasure to give to the Lord in three main areas: Sunday gatherings, a life group, and serving in our community. Those are basically the only three areas that we ask, right? I did the math that if you came to like the 47-ish Sundays that we meet on a Sunday, if you're part of a life group every other week, and if you serve in our community, you would give about 200 hours a year to the church. Out of, I think there's like 8,500 hours in the year total. So 200 hours you would give to the church. Those 200 hours of discipline are vital to your growth. So when you miss or don't care, it will affect your transformational process. So instead of developing and finding discipline in your life, we often worry and stress about all the things of life, and then we constantly put ourselves in a deficit rather than in delight. Now, I gave the church illustration because, let me ask you this question. If you gave anything 200 hours a year to your life, would it transform something? If you spent 200 hours working out a year, would it transform your body? Yeah. 100%. If you gave 200 hours a year to loving your spouse intentionally, would it transform your marriage? Your kids? Would it transform your kids? Kids, would it transform your relationship with your parents? Do you see what I'm getting at? Like that's like bare bones. Now, contrast it with this. I know we do this a lot, but the average person spends 2,500 hours in front of a screen a year. So tell me what's transforming your life. And all the fingers are pointing back at me too, by the way. So if you want transformation, you have to create discipline that will create delight. Let me give you an example in marriage, and this can be understood even if you're not married. The two biggest issues in marriage are what? Anybody know?
Money.
Who's going to be brave?
Intimacy.
Intimacy. Okay. We'll take it, right? Two biggest issues. Now, for the illustration, let's discuss intimacy in any way, okay? When intimacy is an issue in marriage, it stems from no discipline to find delight in the area. So most intimacy in marriage is transactional, not transformational. You guys are like, ooh. What do I mean by that? Well, usually one person has a need, whether it be emotional, spiritual, physical, whatever it is, mental. And so one person does something to get what they need. They receive what they need, satisfied, and then they move back into deficit. Make sense? And we do that with every area of our life. It's transactional. So we do what we need to do to get the transaction of what we need, and then we move back into deficit. And then we do what we need to do to get that whatever need it is met, and then we move back into deficit. You can play it out in your spiritual life, your emotional health, your mental health, your physical health, your relational health, your money, and your time. So we are constant in this cycle of that. Same is true in our life in Jesus. We go about life, no delight in the Lord, no presence with him. Then we have a need arise, and what do? We panic, we stress, and we do things. We make commitments to the Lord to meet our need, and then that need is satisfied, and then we begin the cycle all over again. So delighting in the Lord, how do we make that a consistent delight? It can't work from a deficit. It has to work from a discipline. And discipline reminds us of how God has given us all that we need, and I need to press into that. So we live transactionally, that most things in life that happen, if you're living a transactional life, things that come up in your life, they become major things when they don't need to be, because you're living in a deficit. So you have to make the switch. Let me give you a quick example. In Psalm 137, the author speaks of the Babylonian exile and says, "By the waters of Babylon, we sat and wept when we remembered Zion." And then it says, "How can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land?" These are the people in exile. And then in Jeremiah 29, he answers that question and he says this, "Well, build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I've carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper." He told them, in effect, don't mourn, engage. Create rhythms and disciplines in the space God has provided for you, and it will lead desire to prosper in the land. We're so accustomed to transaction that we don't actually know how to transform our situation into delight. I hear this a lot. People are like, I just don't feel like spending time with God. My response to that is, then you will never delight in him. You'll never delight in him. You have to create the discipline to create the delight, and to create the discipline, you will have to deprive and detox your life of other things. Does that make sense? We follow? It's the last point. So once you've done that, says he will give you the desires of your heart. Well, if you've detoxed your life, you've created discipline, you've assessed your life, and then you've created disciplines to detox your life of other things, to have the desires, it says the desires of your heart will be met. Well, why? Why all of a sudden will you feel that the desires of your heart are being met? Because you're delighting in the Lord. So now the desires of the transactional things that you've always wanted, you don't actually desire them, and you don't actually, you don't want them. Instead, you're delighting in the Lord because you've created a discipline in any area of your life, and then those are the desires of your heart. And that desire is transformational. Transformational. Make sense? That was a lot. Questions? Answers? Yeah.
So when you're going through your process to try to declutter and make room for a new discipline, what are some methods you use to figure out what, besides the obvious junk that needs to get out? If it's not all junk and you have to get rid of something good, how do you flush that out? How do I make time to make this new discipline thing better?
Yeah,
my biggest struggle is usually laziness.
Sure.
So like the free time, the spare time, the 20 minutes here that you could have been doing something and just sitting there and staring at the wall.
Yeah, and the goal is not to just be busy all the time.
Right.
right? The Lord tells us to rest. We need to rest, right? I'll give you an example in my life. Hopefully this doesn't sound bad, but for 10 years planning a church, I have given my time, my energy, my resources, and my money to the church. 10 years in, I'm realizing I've got a deficit in my family. So now the good thing of the church, I've got to back off a little bit. Actually, I can't spend that much time with you today. I can in a week, but I can't today. Does that make sense? So it's a good thing. I may have to rearrange it. So it doesn't necessarily, I'm not getting rid of it, but I'm shifting that. Does that make sense? So now I have two good things that are healthy. You follow? Does that help? Not help?
Well, just how do you know when the right time is to do that? Like, you know, it's a tough decision to have to pull back from.
Yeah, when your wife tells you. No, seriously. I think that, I think a lot of times we actually do know. We just don't want to make the jump. Like, we know there's areas that it's like, I should work on that. But I don't want to. Well, maybe that's the thing. Remember, you don't have to work on everything. Start with one, and it'll probably impact a lot of things. Make sense? Does that help? Sort of? Kind of? Anybody else?
Yeah, how much is it a function of your own internal life versus we are just imperfect beings living in a fallen world, and there's only 24 hours in a day?
Yeah. So like what I'm talking about can be pretty overwhelming to you if you're like, a lot to fix. So the deficit is the result of the fallen world, right? We pursue the transactional life versus transformational life because we live in a fallen world. So we have to make the shift, okay, I got 24 hours, how am I gonna spend it? And I would say you go through those areas, right? And I always tell people, start in your home. How am I gonna spend it with my spouse, then my kids, okay? And then flush it from there. Like, what else do I need to do? Okay, I probably should hang with some friends once in a while for community, right? Okay, maybe I should love my neighbors a little bit, right? But I think a lot of times, if like in my case, you end up doing so many things that you're actually not impacting anything. Does that make sense? Does that help? So start a home, relationship with the Lord, spouse, kids, and go from there. If you're not married, you don't have kids, that may be different for you. It may be relationship with the Lord, then it may be friendships, school, sports, whatever, and you go from there. Does that make sense? You make those headings.
You can also do those things with your kids.
Correct. For sure.
Drag them along too.
Yep. 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 Yep.
That hurt the desires of your heart. That's one of my grandma's favorite verses. I think as we look at it transactionally as, well, if we delight, he'll give me what I want. But we have to look too, is if we're delighting in the Lord, he's going to not only give us the desires of our hearts as far as our wants, but he's going to change the desires of our hearts so that what we want is what he wants for us.
Yeah.
It's not just a transactional, it's a way of life.
Yeah.
Filled with the Spirit, living it out daily. So that it's, I won't say it's easy, but it flows.
Yeah, that's the transformation.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. So you assess. Lord tells us, search me, know me. Like, what do I need to work on? Okay. Create the discipline. The discipline creates the delight. And then my desires change for transformation, not transaction. That makes sense? So, for instance, like, you want to go work out. I don't want to work out just to lose weight. I want to work out because I want to lose weight because I've got a grandchild on the way. I want to be healthy. I want to be with them, right? I'm not going to spend as much money on food. Like, all of a sudden, it affects all these areas of life. That makes sense? Cool.
How do you provoke change?
Provoke it?
With promote it.
Oh, promote it.
One of those two words, you know, with a friend, a spouse, a coworker, something like that, if you want to create a change, but it's selfishly transactional because it's to create a change in whatever dynamic that is.
Yeah. I think sometimes when it's like, you know, if it's a close relationship with somebody, those are hard conversations, right? Because you're going to someone that needs to change themselves to tell somebody else that they need to change, right? So two things. One, you can go to them and say, how do we change together? What do you see in me? Here's what I see in you. How do we change together? Sometimes you need a third party outside of that relationship to speak into it. Does that make sense? Where they can be a mediator for whatever change needs to happen. Does that make sense? So whether it's your kid, your spouse, friend, whatever, sometimes you need a third person that can be an outside perspective to talk through that. So, does that help? Yeah. Cool. Jen and Julie are going to kill me, so I'm going to quit. We're going to pray and be done. So, God, thanks for some time together this morning. We're grateful for it, and thank you for everything that you do for us. So we ask that we can do the things that transform our life into who you are, in your name. Amen. If you're like sitting here this morning and you're like, just give me a call. I'd gladly meet with you, okay? Glad to check in with you and talk through some of that. Cool? Great. Have a good week. We're not going to sing. No. Julie will kill me. She's already probably killing me.
I'll play some outro music.